Hi, I'm Mike Sklenz, and welcome to episode 36 of Nintendo World Report's Connectivity. This episode, we've got a few wonderful little segments for your enjoyment. First off, Neil, Scott, Zach, and myself tackle some listener mail, including the topic of the show's namesake, GameCube connectivity. After that, Carmine interviews independent game developer Jason Rohr about his upcoming title, Diamond Trust of London. And finally, we close out the show with a good old-fashioned round of Connectivity Jeopardy. Enjoy the episode.
Hi, and welcome to another rousing edition of Listener Mail on Connectivity. I'm your host for this, Neil Ronahan, and with me, I got Zach Miller.
Cool, cool, cool.
Andy Gergen.
Cool, cool, cool.
And Mike Sklenz.
I love our bed.
This is our protest episode.
Zach and Neil in the morning.
Nights!
I thought this was supposed to be a listener mail segment, but I think it might have gotten hijacked already.
But I think
we just love community.
I knew it. This is a bottle episode.
There will be a later segment about community and the video game episode, but for now we are going to focus on the listener mail. And Zach, if you would be so kind, but to read the first letter.
Oh, of course. Nothing would make me happier. Adolf Vega writes... I know Nintendo has not shown off specs for a new console slash handheld in a long time, but do you think they need to with Wii U at E3? It doesn't have to be specific, just something like, the Wii U has more RAM than Xbox 360, PS3, Wii put together times two. I sort of think that Nintendo needs to speak loudly as to the power of the Wii U so people... are no longer confused if it's more powerful than the Xbox 360 PS3 and see it as a real leap ahead. What are your thoughts?
I don't think there is anything that Nintendo can do to make people not think that it is the same as 360 and PS3.
Here's what they can do. Don't tell anyone any of the specs. Just show people how good it looks.
If it looks that good...
Then it doesn't matter how much more RAM it has or how many gigaflops or fucking terabytes or whatever the shit. No one cares. The average consumer doesn't look at that shit.
It's bits, Mike. Bits.
Nintendo has always been like Apple. Like,
it's not
about what like the raw specs are of the machine. It's about what it can do. If they show software that impresses at E3, it doesn't really matter what the specs are. Honestly, if they had never shown the specs of the Wii, that would have probably helped out. Well, they never really did, but they made that offhand comment about it being about 1.5 times power of the GameCube, and that bit them in the ass for years.
Yeah.
If they hadn't said that, I mean, granted, people would eventually have figured out that it wasn't an HD system, but there wouldn't have been this rash of jokes about it being two GameCubes duct taped together.
Yeah, but thank God, because I love that joke.
I mean, it's like the old Xbox controller being two hamsters duct taped together.
Yeah, that is. I always love that Penny Arcade comic where they're playing Halo with the original Xbox controllers, and
the controllers are literally five times bigger than they are.
It's so good.
I like it. I like the one with the bear. We've replaced Gabe's Xbox controller with a grizzly bear, and he says, I think I like it more.
But I mean, going back to the graphic debate, I mean, it's at this point, all those kind of graphic tech stuff, it doesn't make as big of a difference as people think. I mean, of course, you'll have people that will say, you know, the PS3 is way better than any other system, but it's like, you put a 360 and a PS3 game side by side, and I think I'd be hard pressed to tell you any kind of huge difference.
Maybe a little something. PS3 has 8 cores.
Yeah.
8! The Xbox only has 3, clearly it's almost 3 times as powerful.
They should just come out and say it's a 512-bit system.
It'll be the Wii 512.
We're hitting a real diminishing return on graphics this generation. This is the generation where this turn has started. You could see a sharp increase, but throughout the generation hasn't really gotten that much better, and from what you see of the tech demos, you know, the Wii U... is supposedly more powerful.
Yep.
I look exponentially, but it's not supposed to be exponentially
really
more powerful. It looks really good, but it doesn't. We're starting to hit diminishing returns. The next Xbox and the next PlayStation, they're not going to
be the leap that you saw between the PS2 and the PS3.
Exactly.
I don't think you're ever going to see that again.
They're going to do not the exact same, but a very similar thing to what happened with the Wii. Nintendo decided to just do it a generation early. They said there's a diminishing returns on graphics, and they're going to go ahead and not focus on that. And everyone said they were crazy. But Microsoft and Sony are going to pull the exact same shit with PS4 and Xbox 720 or whatever.
Indeed. Well, they already have. The Kinect is Microsoft's next Xbox for the next 5 years.
No kidding.
Or 3 years at this point. 3 more years. They don't want to go any further than they don't want to jump a whole system ahead. It costs them tons of money to do that. If they can squeeze a couple more years of life out of this one,
yeah,
then they will.
I mean, the one thing that with the rumors that have come out with all the Wii U stuff is a lot of the developers that complained about it initially, supposedly their troubles were that they were taking PS3 and 360 games and just trying to put them on the Wii U with little effort, and that's why they would get frustrated, because it would either be exactly the same or no discernible difference. Whereas apparently from some of the developers that have been working on games from the ground up, you talk to Randy Pitchford over at Gearbox, who they've basically been making Aliens Colonial Marines for that system, as well as, or at least it's based off of the PC version as opposed to the 360 PS3 version, and he's saying that that's going to be the best-looking console version by far. Mm. And then you have people at Ubisoft talking about Killer Freaks and other games that they're making from the ground up for the system, and it's a lot better.
That's exactly what happened with the GameCube. If they made systems for the GameCube from the ground up, it was probably on par, if not better looking than the Xbox. But
I think Rogue Squadron still is like the best looking game in the past 10 years.
No, dude, it's the best looking Wii game out right now.
It's probably it was better looking than any Xbox game I ever saw. I mean, yeah. But you ported a PS2 or an Xbox game down to GameCube, and it usually had a lot of frame rate problems, and it didn't look all that impressive. The problem, if what you're saying is true, that's great, but the problem is they've got to convince people to make games for this thing as the lead SKU. I have no real confidence that they can do that.
Middleware will get there eventually.
Yeah.
I hope so.
I mean, I think that's the thing, is that there's also the other rumors that, which I think some of these are pretty substantiated at this point, where Crytek, with what was it, Cry 3 or whatever the hell their engine is, and Unreal. There were early rumors that both of them didn't work, but apparently Nintendo has been working closely with both companies to get those middlewares to work better on Wii U. So while kind of letting them give them the tricks of the trade, so that way they could have that be brought up and then other companies could easily bring their games to the system. I mean, I guess we'll kind of see how the Unreal Engine looks, because Arkham City is coming to it.
Yeah, well, look at this way, that Zelda tech demo they showed off, that was all running in real time. And that was built on, early development hardware. That thing looks freaking gorgeous.
It was really, it wasn't a, well, I guess it was. It was real time.
No, you could control the camera and move it around and everything. Yeah. No, it was, that was a real time demo.
You could control the camera. So it didn't have to go real time.
It didn't have to support player input apart from the camera.
Yeah.
So that's something that it's not having to cope with. It doesn't have to run all this logic in the background. It just has to run this series of animations.
Yeah, no AI or anything.
And then let you move the camera. But that was built on development hardware. Surely, on final hardware, in a year, a year after release, the developers will be able to make something that looks that good and is accepting player input at the same time.
Well, guys, let's get real. We're not going to see that Zelda game be a full game. We're going to get a cel shaded one in 2 years.
Yeah. Oh no. Nice. Now that they've shown off the CGI Zelda, not the CGI, but the awesome looking, high graphics, awesome mature looking Zelda game. That is the next one is cel shaded for sure. Yeah. If I've learned anything in the past, my expectations, honestly, it's probably going to work against them, because this time I really hope the next one will be cel shaded,
and it
probably
won't be.
It's going to be the complete opposite.
See, I don't really expect to get games from Nintendo that look that good. That's not what I want from Nintendo. I don't want a Mario game that makes it look realistic. And that's what these.
No, Mario won't look realistic though, but. It'll,
Metroid,
I mean,
Metroid would be a good choice for that.
Metroid Other M looked damn good.
I know it did, but you can take it to the next level.
You can take it to HD.
You can give Samus nostrils, not just I don't know what that is.
but look at Metroid. Metroid's been made for consoles, at least exclusively by Retro, a studio who has done nothing but make awesome Metroid games, pretty much, and Donkey Kong Country, which was also awesome. Team Ninja. It's not like EAD is working on Metroid. I mean, they haven't given it to a development studio that's known for graphics besides Retro and an external development house that also is known for graphics. So,
right.
Yeah, Metroid will always be a graphical power.
Yeah, it'll always
now.
Be good because they focus on that. But other things, like if you look at what the Wii was known for, it was known for things like Wii Sports and Cooking Mama. And, I mean, sure, there were some good-looking games on there, but the games that the system was really known for weren't...
Pretty shitty.
I don't really expect Nintendo to make games that look that great. I just hope that the third parties are there this time.
I disagree. Mario Galaxy 2 and Mario Galaxy 1 both look really...
I will guarantee you that we will all be
Skyward
looking at E3
Sword,
footage of Pikmin 3, and we'll just go like, oh, wow, that is
Pikmin
beautiful.
3 will look photorealistic with a garden and then a million little dudes running around it.
I think Skyward Sword looked good, Zach, but I wouldn't say it looked great. It looked competent.
The art design in Skyward Sword is great.
Yeah.
The actual technical prowess is good.
I thought it was okay. I thought it was good.
It wasn't as good as Wind Waker.
No,
the look of the game.
That's a hard. It was better than Twilight.
Yeah, I mean, art design wise, yeah. I mean, I think Wind Waker will always stand out for some.
Dude, Link's Awakening was better than Twilight Princess.
I hate the Twilight Princess art design.
If you look at a game like those some of the better looking Wii games, if you look at them running on a Dolphin emulator in HD, they look really good.
Yeah,
and that's if they can pull that out of the Wii, I'm excited to see what guys like EAD Tokyo can do with a Wii U.
So I think it's close to being able to confirm this. Wii U will be the generation of the Nintendo HD remakes, right?
Yeah.
I would hope so.
Probably.
The GameCube HD remakes, you mean?
Yeah. Or even Wii.
Or even N64, shit.
Yeah. Well,
maybe not.
Those will continue being remade on 3DS.
But I mean, it'll be interesting to see because when Microsoft and Sony got access to this higher presentation level, they used it to launch some really successful IPs like Gears of War and Uncharted.
Yeah.
So now, with Nintendo, if you can give that to a good team and they can create a really compelling story and fuse that together with the technology, what's going to be the new IP that they come out with that really takes advantage of all
what
this?
Retro is working on, what Monolith is working on. I think those are the two games that will be coming out for Wii U.
Maybe what Silicon Knights is working on.
You mean
on.
Eternal Darkness 2?
Yeah. Yeah.
There
yeah,
is almost no doubt in my mind that I think Eternal Darkness 2 is a thing. Everything that Silicon Knights has been teasing basically says we're making Eternal Darkness 2, and if they're not, they're fucking assholes.
That would be awesome.
I would like to see a sequel to that.
Because they've been talking about how we're making the sequel to the game you guys all want a sequel to. It ain't going to be Legacy of Kain. They're never going to touch that game again. It better not be Too Human, because no one wants a sequel to Too Human.
Unless they're doing a sequel of a game that they didn't previously develop. It could be a sequel to a Nintendo property or something.
They're doing a Wii U remake of Metal Gear Solid 2.
Nice.
I wish.
I mean, honestly, if Team Reggie and company are trying to get hardcore fans excited about something they weren't expecting, man, that would do it. I mean,
and that's a really mature, like intense adult IP.
It probably started development back on the Super Nintendo or something.
Yeah.
I was doing some LinkedIn profile stalking to try to see if I can get any insight on what some of those in the dark Nintendo developers are doing. I was looking at a bunch of people who work for Retro. And I have a good feeling that we're going to get an Other M like reveal this year, or there will be a trailer near the end of the... Another Other M type reveal, where we'll see whatever... We'll get a trailer, whatever they're working on, coming in 2013. Because they staffed up... Like, they basically just pillaged every other studio in Austin, Texas in about, July 2011, and... They seem to be able to follow a 2-year cycle pretty well. So, August 2013.
But the question, Neil, is, will that reveal trailer make me cry?
Probably not, but you're a little bitch, so maybe.
Next question.
All right.
So, yeah, going back, graphics, cool. All right, I got the next letter. It's from Brandon, and he writes, "Hello, Connectivity Crew. Three friends and I will be staying in the mountains. We have decided to bring some GameCube games while we are up there. Do you have any suggestions on some great local multiplayer / co-op games for GameCube? Have you guys played any games that support the GameCube link cable, like Four Swords Adventure or Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles? Also, what are your guys' favorite GameCube memories of local multiplayer?
I have one, but I can't say it because it involves bad words that I won't say. Oh. But it's a good story. I'm just not going to tell it to you.
Mike has a good story, confirmed.
Oh, okay. Can you at least tell us what the game is?
No, we were playing Final Fantasy Crystal Chronicles, which is wonderful in and of itself because it is a game that you absolutely have to cooperate, but yeah. You fucking do not want to. Everyone is out for themselves the entire time.
Yeah.
Just like Zelda.
That is my beef with Crystal Chronicles, is that
someone has to be the bucket bitch.
Yeah, and no one wants to be the bucket bitch. So you just have it descends into chaos where people are either like, you know, all right, Bob, you're gonna carry the bucket, and he'll just be like, no, fuck you, and then he'll walk away with the bucket and kill everybody.
Yeah, we would do the same thing to the point where we had to have like a gentleman's agreement that this world has four levels. One of us is going to be the bucket bitch in each of it. It's got to be. We're not going to get through it any other way. We will draw straws so you get to pick the order because no one wants to be the bucket bitch in the last level because that's where all the best loot is.
I mean, I really enjoyed playing that game, but it just would get so frustrating after a while. And that's the same thing with Four Swords Adventures because you'd get to that same point where it just you would be screwing each other over so much that it would stop being fun.
The multiplayer, yep. Not the multiplayer, it's all multiplayer. The battle mode in Four Swords Adventure was a lot of fun.
Oh, yeah. No, that's great because then you don't need to cooperate. You just kill each other.
Yeah, sick the cuckoos on everybody. That's the best one.
I will say that every time I got a room full of people to play Pac-Man Versus, everyone loved it.
Oh, yes. So
for
good.
As much shit as that game took for being like not an exciting E3 reveal, that game was so much fun in a room full
of
people.
What's so cool about that? You're going to see a game like that on Wii U. That was one of the demos last year.
If they don't, I want the proper version of Pac-Man Versus. I want them to re-release it on the Wii eShop, and I want to be able to play it.
That would be so awesome. Yeah.
Where each of the ghosts is on a quadrant of the screen, and then the player has just got Pac-Man down on the tablet.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Please give me Pac-Man. That game, I don't know why they made it the centerpiece of that press conference. They spent like 15
way
minutes,
too
I feel
much
like.
Time on were you at that E3, Mike?
Yeah, I
no?
was at that E3. So they spent so much time, and everyone was up just watching it, and they're like, well, I mean, this is kind of cool, but it's just Pac-Man. Why are they spending so much time on this? And they were doing, that was the year where they were pushing connectivity very, very, very hard.
Yeah.
And then, but when you got on the floor played Pac-Man Versus, got it instantly. First time I sat down and played it, I was like, oh, this is like a lot of fun. It's impossible to show someone how fun it is, but if you put them in front of it for one round of it, they will immediately understand the whole thing and just freak out over how much they love
it. I should probably rescue my old feature that I did with GamePro that no longer exists on the internet anymore because they're dead. But I spent a lot of time with friends. This was a couple weeks after E3 last year where I gathered all the GameCube to GBA connectivity games that I could find and we played them all. And we played Pac-Man Verse for like 4 hours. And it was a bunch of people. Like, I think I was the only person that really knew about it before then. And it was a blast.
Yeah, I bought that Pac-Man 2 game just to get Pac-Man Versus. Because it came in a double pack.
I think GameStop just gave me a copy of it.
It was a pre-order bonus for something, I think it, or no, it wasn't a pre-order bonus. It was like but at one point after it'd been out for long enough, it was like only available some special way. They re-released a two-pack that came with Pac-Man World 2 and Pac-Man Versus.
Yeah, I think I have Pac-Man World 2 and I've never touched it before. Apparently it's not that bad.
It's not that bad. I think I might have even reviewed it for the site. Because I had it and I was like, well, I got this. It came with Pac-Man Versus. Oh, I gotta bust that out. I need to find some more Game Boys. I've got all the link cables.
Are there any more Game Boy Advance to GameCube connectivity games that are even really worth mentioning?
No, I think the Zelda one's great. I played that with four people. We went all in on that game and a bunch of link cables. It was awesome. Four Swords Adventures?
It is the same problem as Crystal Chronicles.
Oh, sure, because you're all in it for the rupees, but
yeah,
but it's a fun-ass game, man.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fun. We fell so hard into Crystal Chronicles.
Yeah, I had a couple friends that would always try to loot me into it.
Those games came out while I was in college, which was literally the fucking perfect time for them to come out.
Oh,
it was so good.
I will
good.
Say that you can't have a conversation about GameCube multiplayer without talking about Melee. I mean,
yeah, of course.
Wow.
Well, and yeah. And in all honesty, Monkey Ball with Monkey Target and stuff.
Oh yeah, Monkey Ball was great. I mean, that, I think, you know, Rogue Leader was by and far the best GameCube launch title, but Monkey Ball took a lot of time out of our.
I distinctly remember going over my friend's house. I would have been, not to make you three guys feel old, I was like in eighth grade, I think, when the GameCube came out.
Oh, Jesus.
But I remember on launch day, my friend got it, and I walked down the street to his house, and we played, you know, like, I saw, like, Luigi's Mansion and stuff like that. And I think, no, Pikmin wasn't out yet, but there was a trailer for Pikmin on Luigi's Mansion. And we put in Monkey Ball, and I don't even think we, like, we didn't get the Monkey Target for a while. We were just playing the normal Monkey Ball. And I think we ended up playing that for like 3 hours or something. And I remember walking home from that and being like, that is the most fun I've ever had with another person in a video game.
Yeah, Monkey Ball was probably the game I played the most on GameCube for like those 3 weeks before Smash Brothers came out.
Yeah,
yeah, definitely.
I mean, unfortunately, Monkey Ball kind of got tossed on the side once Melee came out. But I had a lot of fun with that game and the sequel in multiplayer as throughout the system's life. I actually remember going back to it a little bit before we came out and getting back into it for a while.
God, Neil, you were the same age when you got your GameCube as I was when I got my Genesis. Good
wait,
God.
Okay, wait. What year, how old were you when the GameCube came out, Neil?
I was in eighth grade. I was
Can
born
we
in 88.
Talk about this.
What year were you born?
88.
Oh, it's only 5 years. Okay, so you're only 5 years younger than me.
It just seems like a lot when I was borrowing like Sonic 2. When he was
The GameCube came out in what year again?
2001.
It was right before. Yeah, so I was a senior in high school.
Yeah.
I got the GameCube and I went to college and it was awesome.
That is about the best thing you could have possibly done.
Yeah, I did the same thing, Mike.
Yeah, and well, that was the same year the Xbox came out, so we had an Xbox like a couple years later, and we were in the dorm, and everyone had their Xbox on the LAN, so you could play 16-player
right,
Halo.
Yep.
I did that with Halo 3 in college.
Yeah. Yeah, but see, Halo 3 had Xbox Live, so you could always find someone to play with. And on Halo, it was only local and system link.
Yeah.
It was LAN and system link.
I have some fantastic memories of, you know, ridiculously long Ethernet cables connecting stuff in the dorms for Halo 3.
See, I only had 1 year in the dorms with my GameCube because I was living off campus when it came out. And then I moved back to the dorms my last year in college because I wanted free room and board to be an RA. So I did that. I was basically the guy on the floor who had the GameCube, and everyone seemed to really love it. Like, we had two Animal Crossing towns on two different memory cards. People would just, like, hang out in my room so all hours of the night waiting for their turn to play Animal Crossing. Like, on a dude floor. Like, I had, like, eight dudes who were, like, totally into Animal Crossing. It was awesome.
Animal Crossing had come out, and we had not played it that much. We played it a little. So, and then, like, a year later, in my senior year, I was like, well, I'm going to hook up Animal Crossing because I just moved the GameCube back out into the main room. So I thought, well, I'm going to hook up Animal Crossing. And it immediately turned into a game of who can wake up earliest in the morning.
Yeah.
Steal all the shit and then leave like a fuck you note on the board and then just go back to sleep.
Seriously, my
2
my,
in the morning I woke up.
It was
so
much
up overnight.
Fun. And I'll never enjoy an Animal Crossing game as much as I enjoyed that one. And it has nothing to do with the game and how much they don't change it or do change it or what they take out or put in. It's all about how much fun I had with the multiplayer in the dorm when the first one came out. What that game was all about for me. I've tried every version ever like that's come out since, both on DS and Wii. And, you know, I'll get really into it for like a week and then it's done.
You need that community to be able to keep up doing that. And hopefully the 3DS version will actually get that right.
Yeah. Well, I don't know, but when you're three dudes living in an apartment in college, like you turn everything into a competitive game.
Yeah.
So we figured out like there's only like one or two ways that you can win Animal Crossing, and I'm gonna do them all every day.
Yeah.
And no one else can. And you could be lord of that little fucking village for 24 hours. And no one can say shit. There's no more fossils, all the fruit is gone. Try again tomorrow, loser.
Who can make the most irritating town theme?
Yes. Though I guess this isn't really a good... I mean, this is a brilliant GameCube multiplayer game, but it's not exactly what they're looking for.
No.
Since they're only going to be there for a weekend.
That's true.
I've been sitting on probably an obscure one. I actually did make a list before we did this, just looking at my GameCube games. But two James Bond games, From Russia with Love and Everything or Nothing, I believe they were made by the same EA development studio.
Yeah,
but
I
Everything
think so.
Or Nothing is kind of like this... I mean, it's like kind of like from like a bird's eye view of like an arena, and... you know, it's not like it's like, you know, everyone's playing on the same screen and you're moving around and there's traps you can set in each environment and there's different guns and there's a lot of melee combat in it. And it's just very frenetic and a ton of fun. And then From Russia with Love is a third person shooter that has fucking jetpacks in it. And it's kind of
well,
awesome.
Well, isn't it like a sequel to From Russia with Love, but a video game sequel?
No, it's a remake of From Russia with Love with Sean Connery in it.
Right.
But the multiplayer in this game, that there are jetpacks, and it is awesome. I played Everything or Nothing back when the GameCube was actually out because I had a friend of mine who was just kind of like, yo, you got to check this out, and brought it over, and I was blown away by how much fun I had with it.
That was the one where Heidi Klum was a Bond girl, right?
I believe so.
Nice.
And then From Russia with Love, I only played because I did a one-up feature the other year about all the games that came out between the two Golden Eyes, and I had to play From Russia with Love, was not looking forward to it. Played the multiplayer, and there's jetpacks, and it's awesome.
Well, you know, we would be remiss if we didn't talk about Double Dash.
Yeah, that was the next one on my list.
Johnny Nets would have our heads if we did not talk about Double Dash.
Double Dash is a fantastic game. It is not for the Mario Kart meek, but yeah. it is a wonderful game. It is
Baby Park.
Yes.
Simplest and most diabolically evil.
You can
level.
Power slide around the whole thing.
Yeah, and and if you wanted to win, you had to.
Yep. Yeah. And avoid all the shells and bananas and everything else.
And I love all like the big angry banana power up that Donkey Kong and Diddy
Kong.
That's
right. Yeah.
That always made me laugh.
You drop that on Baby Park and everyone is fucked.
Yeah.
Yeah, Double Dash is great, and I wish they'd go back to that well.
And Double Dash did the System Link too, right? It did the System Link, so you could play with 8 players.
It also had. Well, yeah, with Warp Pipe, you could do it online.
You could do it online through Warp Pipe, yeah.
But it did have System Link. I think Kirby Air Ride also had System Link, and there was one more. 1080.
PSO did.
Well, no, that was online, but there were three
that
had System Link. I think it was 1080.
Had a System Link mode? I didn't know that.
Maybe. I'll
if only it wasn't that. Incredibly difficult to come across a stupid broadband adapter.
Yeah,
I think I had to order one direct from Nintendo.
Yeah.
You could probably get one at GameStop. Even had one.
I wonder if I have it still. I might have sold it. They're probably worth a good chunk of change.
Probably. God, I missed the GameCube.
Nintendo
for the
game.
N64 and the GameCube, if you had 3 friends, there's no reason not to own the Nintendo console.
Yeah. You know, I really liked, even though it's not a Nintendo-specific game, I thought it was best on the GameCube was Tony Hawk 3.
I was going to bring that one up, too. I think that even for a multiplayer game, that's the kind of game that's great because it's 2-minute runs. You can just kind of pass it around.
Yeah.
And by the way, I just looked it up. 1080 Avalanche did have online sitting nice. Kirby or ton of, the system link stuff.
Yeah. And you can tunnel it over the internet. Yeah. Thanks to those nerds who wrote Warp Pipe.
Yep.
Did that actually work? Like, was it playable?
Yeah. I played Double Dash with people. So, like, that was all I really used it for, and I only did it for like a month because it was hard to find people on it.
Yeah.
No one knew about it.
Sure.
I imagine there must be no one that ever played 1080 with it.
Yeah, everyone used it for Mario Kart.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But yeah, Tony Hawk 3 is, I think that's still the best game in the series, and I'm downright giddy for the new game that's coming out.
Oh, me too. Does that even have a release date yet?
June is what they're saying.
You want.
I will be knocking down doors at E3 being like, I don't care if it's not coming out for a Nintendo system. I want to say hi to Tony Hawk and play the fucking game.
I just thought of one more GameCube multiplayer game that I have to mention because it's a blast. Pikmin 2.
I've never played the multiplayer.
That game has a fantastic... It's great. It's so much fun. You got to try it out.
No.
You know what? I will on June 10th.
Heck yeah, you will. It's a lot of fun.
Yeah, I guess now is as good a time as any. I actually mentioned it on the NWR Facebook today and the Twitter. But Pikmin 2 will be our game of the month for June.
Hell yeah!
Well,
so
I'm
that
not
should be
taking
fun.
Part in that.
Oh come on! Don't be a little bitch, Zach.
I'm very excited to after I sleep for 2 or 3 days after E3 to buy Pikmin 2 and play it.
Yeah, the multiplayer is great. Too. It's there's a couple different variants on it, but one of the variants that I like is like 5 or 6 marbles. It's like blue and red marbles, and you have to and they're scattered all across a stage, and you have to get your You have to either get all of your opponent's marbles or maybe protect your own marbles, but you have to go, like, basically collect all these little objects and bring them back to your base or steal your opponent's, like, home marble and bring it back. It's a lot
really
of fun.
Cool.
There's power-ups. It's really well done. It's a lot
and
of
it's
fun.
It's only two-player, right?
Yes. Split screen.
Yeah.
Oh, you should probably get a Mario Party game in there somewhere.
Never played a Mario Party game on the GameCube.
There were some decent ones.
The only good Mario Party game is Mario Party 2.
Party 2. I knew you were going to say that.
Now, Mario Party 9, you guys can be haters, but that is a revolution to the series, and it's awesome.
Is 9 the, one, is 9 the one that just came out?
Yeah.
This is totally out of left... Well, not totally out of left field, but Soul Calibur 2 was awesome on GameCube.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun playing that. I never owned it, but I would play with friends a whole lot.
Yeah, I never owned it either, but I played it a lot. And I would
it's still the best Soul Calibur, in fact.
Yeah, I would just tap people on the head with Raphael's sword.
I always did that too, and people would get so pissed.
Oh,
yeah,
you guys are
people
cocks.
Hate that move. Tap, tap, tap!
It's like, oh, I'm sorry, I can play another guy, and you would just beat the crap out of me.
Or I can use Raphael and stand a chance of winning.
Yes.
He has reach.
I guess the only other game I had written down was Time Splitters, kind of referring to 2.
Yeah, Time Splitters 2
and
was good,
a little bit Future Perfect. I had Time Splitters 2, and that had, like, I made awesome maps in that and had a ton of fun with that. And at some point, I guess I thought it was a good idea to sell it, which was kind of a mistake. I ended up getting Future Perfect, like, pretty damn cheap around right before the Wii came out and played it, and it's not the same. But Time Splitters 2 is probably the best multiplayer first-person shooter game on the system.
You know what's really cool about Future Perfect?
What?
It has really good grammar.
It also has really funny characters.
Yeah. I remember playing that a few times. It was good.
But yeah, I can't really think of any other GameCube multiplayer games. I mean, I think we rattled off at least 10, so...
Yeah. Get all
you
of them.
You shouldn't be at a loss. Yeah. Yes.
It can't possibly be that hard to find.
Go to your GameStop. They're finally being ushered out in GameStop. I want to pick up a copy of Kirby Air Ride, but it's still like $20, and I don't want to spend that money.
Maybe it'll just be on the anniversary collection.
I hope. I really do, actually.
You could pray to one day download it on Virtual Console for Wii U.
You know, judging how this Game Boy crap is gone... I mean, maybe it'll be part of that first wave, and then they'll go dark for 4 months.
Yeah, we wouldn't want to release any virtual console games in any kind of consistent way.
They might compete with sales of something.
They might compete with sales of Vampire Chronicles: The Awakening.
Maybe, just maybe. But yeah, Brandon, I hope we gave you a whole mess of GameCube games that you can check out for your time in the mountains.
Yeah, try and get at least one of those connectivity games.
Yeah.
Because those are special. Those are really, you can't do that anyway.
Yeah, and go ahead and try and find a bunch of link cables. And
see, if you can only find one link cable, Pac-Man Versus is all you need.
That's true.
And Wavebirds. I would make sure you have Wavebirds.
Wavebirds. Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Wavebirds. That's a lot of wires to be... passing back.
Wavebirds are a bitch to find, man. I actually kind of stole one of my friends. I didn't realize he brought it over one time, and then I packed it up. And then he's been in Germany for 2 years for grad school. So he knows I have it, but he's going to have to pry it from my cold, dead fingers.
Quickly jumping over to the Wii U before we wrap this up. I hope it happens that you can use a 3DS as a controller for a Wii U for stuff like that, because no wire is necessary. It makes it much more possible for it to easily happen without getting all those stupid cables.
If they don't do that, then they're just kind of spitting and peeing and defecating on the grave of the GBA to GameCube connectivity.
Yeah, they can even do those over Virtual Console. In theory, if you know, you'd have to buy like 3 copies of Crystal Chronicles for your Game Boy or something, or maybe you could just download it directly to your Game Boy wireless.
Remember when Square made that engine so that way they could run the DS game on the Wii?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That was really funny.
Good times.
Yeah, I don't think we're going anywhere else with this listener mail.
That's showing off the power of the system right there. Yeah.
I just love they were all happy about it, too. Like
how they fit both those screens on that screen. That's 2 in 1.
It's
That's
a
bullshit.
Miracle. There's only one screen, and now there's 2.
That's impossible.
I think that's listener mail.
Yeah, that sounded good to me.
See you guys next time.
All right. Peace. See ya.
Bye.
Hello, this is Carmine Red of Nintendo World Report, and I have with me independent game developer Jason Rohr. Thanks for coming on the show, Jason.
Hey, I'm happy to be here.
We're happy to have you. Now, you've got a DS game coming out this year, Diamond Trust of London. We've already got some impressions of it on our site, but maybe you could give our listeners a real quick rundown of what the game is about.
Okay, Diamond Trust of London is a two-player turn-based strategy game for the Nintendo DS. It's a game about diamond traders who are operating in Angola, in Africa, flying back and forth between Angola and London and Antwerp in Belgium in the year 2000, in the few months leading up to the UN passing this Kimberley process for diamond certification that was going to make their diamond trade in and out of Angola illegal. So these guys are, these two different diamond trading corporations are trying to get basically as many diamonds out of Angola before the UN crackdown comes down on them. And it's a game about incomplete information and spying and bribing. And it's a game in which you can have your opponent's hidden information can be revealed to you to help you make your decisions without your opponent knowing that their information is being revealed. Or maybe their information is revealed to you and they know that their information has been revealed, but you don't know that they know. So then you're getting this information that you think you're getting without them knowing, but really they could be feeding you false information. And it keeps going on down the rabbit hole like that. Second guessing and third guessing and second guessing your opponent's second guesses and so on.
Yeah, I really love that part of, well, when I played the preview version of the build, that part of incomplete information. But and I also love this high concept part about the game, the diamond trading. And you don't often see games that have that sort of real world relevance to them. But I actually always thought the game was about the diamond trading, but I read on the website originally you'd pitched it as a couple divorcing.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, this game wasn't about a couple divorcing, but I had pitched a previous game about that was going to have similar kinds of deception and incomplete information mechanics, but in that context. I mean, I would have designed a very different game if it was about a couple divorcing. That was a game about the couples going around a town. Getting things ready for their divorce and while meeting secretly with their lovers outside their marriage and also meeting with their private eyes and sending private eyes to tail the other spouse to try and catch the other spouse cheating and so on. So that it would have involved very different kind of game mechanics, very different sort of style of gameplay and so on. So I still wanted to do a game that dealt with incomplete information and knowledge chains, how you know what your opponent knows about what you know and so on. Looking for another context for that.
It would have turned out different if you were dealing with private eyes and divorce lawyers and stuff.
Diamond traders in Angola seems like a really good context for not being certain of loyalty. How can you really trust? These guys are, dealing with buckets of rough diamonds in Angola and you're talking to them over a satellite phone. How do you really trust that they're playing straight with you? Are they really bringing all the diamonds back, for example? That seemed like the perfect setting for a game about those kinds of things. Of course, I designed a game around that setting. It's not a game about spouses that was just reskinned
well,
as a diamond trader.
Yeah, it's just after hearing that, now I do wonder what that game would have turned out like. It would have been different. It would have had incomplete information, but I can't help wondering now because... it's such a neat concept, especially with the idea of incomete information.
Right, right. Well, I mean, the idea in that game was that you would be able to hire private eyes, hire a private eye to trail your spouse. Your spouse is going around in the game trying to meet with a lawyer to secretly get paperwork to file for a divorce before you do and so on. Also trying to meet with their lover and so on. And so you're trying to catch them doing that. But they might be able to also hire a private eye to tail you. And if they have a private eye on you when you go to meet with your private eye, then they'll know that they're being tailed by a private eye. So they could actually have their private eye tail your private eye, right? So you can have, and then you could have a private eye, an extra private eye tail their private eye that's tailing your private eye. There's these private eyes driving around the city that are kind of looking for each other and trying to gather information about what the spouses are doing. And of course, if you know you're being tailed by a private eye, you're going to try and feed false information back by going to a different location than you're planning to go to sort of confuse your opponent about who you're actually cheating with and so on.
And I guess there's a similar system in Diamond Trust of London where if you know your own agent is bribed, you can give the agent a false move and then change it later on.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So you can know that your agent is bribed but be uncertain whether your opponent knows that you know that. So your opponent might know that they're being fed a false move, or they might not, right?
I guess you could know that,
and your opponent might not know that you know that. So
yeah, I guess this was the advantage of having this sort of game on a DS, a sort of on software where the two players can really not see each other and stuff can happen simultaneously. Whereas, I mean, you could compare this to Euro board games.
When I set out to design this game, I was sort of considering, you know, two player strategy games or multiplayer strategy games, and you know, I like those kinds of games, but you know, why would I make one on a computer? Why wouldn't I just make a board game? Well, what could mm-hmm. I do on a computer that I can't do in a board game? And that was the entire impetus for this project. It's like, let's do two player strategy, turn based strategy, but let's not just do something that might as well just be made as a board game. What can we do that couldn't be done in a board game? And these kind of mechanics where you have hidden information that's revealed without the owner of the information knowing that the information has been revealed, that's impossible to do in a board game. I mean, mm-hmm. how would you do it, right? It's just go peek over their shoulder without them seeing you peek over their shoulder. I mean, but when you have two separate screens, two separate views of the world, two separate views of the information, you can do all sorts of interesting things. And there's some other things that, you know, people will notice about the game that, you know, that take advantage of those things. I'm not gonna spoil it for people, but they're, you know, very observant people will notice some very strange things that are going on because of the fact that we've got two separate screens and two separate views of the world. So those views don't have to be consistent. That's the interesting thing.
Mm-hmm. Could you talk to us a little bit about the music of the game? It's not completely procedurally generated. How would you describe it? It's more like it combines and recombines dynamically different pieces of music.
Right. So it's kind of this happy medium, this happy marriage between, you know, whenever I make a game, I want my music to take advantage of the fact that this is a computer system that can generate music. It doesn't have to be static, linear music that's just playing back. We can do things that can't be done on a CD, for example. On the other hand, I was working with my friend who was collaborating with me on this project, who was making music for it. And he has a compositional style and a music arrangement style that's very set in the world of studio with microphones and drum kits and real synthesizers and his own voice and all these things.
And this is Tom Bailey?
Tom Bailey, yes. And mm-hmm. I couldn't sit him down and say, here, program some music for me like the way I normally do it when I'm making dynamic computer-generated music. I still wanted some it to be dynamic and to not just be playing back these tracks. The other problem is that in a strategy game like this that you're going to play over and over, it's a short game. You know, you play, it's like 15 or 20 minutes to play a single game, but it's the kind of game you can play again and again, like a board game. If we just had looping music that just played the same way over and over again, I think it would get grating really quickly. Mm-hmm. Especially, you know, maybe you're going to be playing this game next year still, right? And, you know, you're still going to be listening to that same grating loop over and over again. So the way it works is that we have this dynamic music engine that is building music out of this collection of samples and little loops, little musical phrases that can be layered with each other. So there's up to five tracks essentially playing at a given time, and for each track there's like a collection of different loops. Like for example, the drum part, there could be like five different versions of that drum kit for that song playing different kinds of drum things. And of course, the drum kit could be absent at a certain moment in the song where there's no drums, right? But those loops are all real recorded loops that he made in studio using his normal methods with all his effects and all his things that he always does with his high-end computer recording methods, right? Including his voice and some other things. So these tracks are kind of mixed together and assembled out of these little parts, out of these little almost like musical Legos. Into musical moments that are changing throughout the game, and they also are changed based on triggers, based on things that are happening within the game. So as your agents move around on the map and the state of the game changes, the music changes to go along with that.
I was wondering if Well, obviously, I think one of the great things about the music is that it's got these high quality audio recordings, the voices, the chanting, and at the same time, there's these instrumental recordings. I was actually next. I'm curious about how a bunch of your projects have found their way onto DSiWare. Actually, this game is coming out for DS. It's a cartridge release, but actually, a bunch of your other projects have come out on DSiWare, like Passage or Primrose, I think.
Right, right. So this was a few years ago. A third-party publisher development studio approached me saying, "Hey, you know, we'd like to port some of your games to DSiWare." And I didn't really know anything about DSiWare or anything at the time, and I was just like, "Okay, sure," you know. And I gave them the source code and helped them a little bit. I mean, I just kind of gave them some advice and answered some questions by email. I didn't do any of the work.
So they released this
this anthology, which has three different games in it: Passage, Gravitation, and Between, on DSiWare. And then they also made a port of my game Primrose for DSiWare. I don't think they realized how hard it was going to be, you know, because the DSi as a platform is rather limited, and so you can't just take code that works on a normal computer and just expect it to run on the DS. So they actually, to get most of those games working, they recoded them all from scratch, I think, pretty much all of them, and tried, in the case of Passage, some of the blending effects just weren't possible on the DS. And so, like, you know, they tried their best to kind of get the game to look kind of like it looks on the PC or Mac.
So this
Diamond Trust is the first time that I'm actually doing DS development. And, you know, of course, it opened my eyes to exactly what those porting guys were struggling with.
And has the process of getting it on a Nintendo console been particularly long? Or I think the game got approved like last fall?
The game was done last fall.
Okay.
It took 7 months for it to get approved. And that was mostly spent, you know, people say, "Oh, weren't there a lot of bugs in there that Nintendo was sending back to you to fix?" They didn't send a single bug back for you to fix. There were no bugs in the game when I submitted it. It was all other issues that they had trouble approving, including the box art and other things that we had to negotiate. And there was a seven-month process of – actually, there were a couple of times during that 7 months where it seemed like the game was not going to come out because Nintendo was not going to allow it to come out the way that I wanted it to. But eventually, you know, we kind of wrestled with these discussions to the point where we got it kind of through. Got it through. I guess it came out the other end.
Well, thank God. And you've been working with IndiePub, I believe, part of Zoo Publishing is publishing this.
Yeah, that's right.
What's it been working with them?
Yeah, so
are you working with Zoo directly, or is IndiePub really its own thing?
Yeah, I mean, you know, IndiePub is sort of the indie publishing arm of Zoo. I mean, it's pretty much the same thing. I mean, I think Zoo is kind of making a transition into becoming IndiePub pretty much fully now. So it's many of the same people who are working at Zoo who are helping me at IndiePub and so on. Obviously, in the case of this game in particular, because it's a cartridge release and it's being manufactured and so on, Zoo kind of resurrecting some of the things that they don't really do anymore, which is, you know, dealing with manufacturing and all these things that they're getting out of when they're going into digital distribution with IndiePub. So still it's kind of relying on Zoo's old world know-how to push this thing through lot check, to get it manufactured, to find a printer that's licensed by Nintendo and get the printer to print the stuff and get the boxes assembled and everything. You know, Zoo is kind of getting out of that business. This may be the sort of last thing that they do that's actually physically manufactured like this.
Yeah, but you guys are also doing something pretty new, which is using Kickstarter to actually fund the manufacturing of this. How has that been going for you guys? Has that always been part of the plan?
No, that wasn't part of the plan. It's just, you know, over time, I mean, this game has been in and out of development for 3 years. When it was initially proposed, you know, 3 years ago, the DS was just a thriving platform, and, you know, cartridge games were selling like hotcakes and so on. That was the era of Cooking Mama and that kind of thing. But over time, the 3 years was not spent developing the game. The 3 years was spent trying to figure out how the game could come out. Mm-hmm. Over time, a lot of stuff has changed, as you guys are aware. And so the DS market has kind of crashed and gone softer and softer and softer over those 3 years, to the point where, you know, it's really kind of a risky proposal to sink, you know, well, like in this case, like $78,000 of cash to getting this minimum order made, and you don't really know how many you're going to sell.
I think the Kickstarter is at 78,000. The target you're trying to hit is 78,715. And actually, I mean, I checked just maybe 2 hours ago. It looks like you're almost there.
Yes, I'm within a paper airplane's throw of crossing the funding line. So you can see that it's been been a bit of a slog, right? It's not like it was funded instantly on day one.
Yeah.
And so it's clear that Kickstarter was a good thing to do here because the interest level was substantial, but it wasn't overwhelming, right? And so if we hadn't done Kickstarter, or we just sort of gotten the cartridges made and then put them up for sale on some website,
you'd be going in blind.
Well, there's a huge risk that we wouldn't have even been able to recoup, right?
Mm-hmm.
And here, at least, we're guaranteed to cover the manufacturing costs. Like, we know that we're going to recoup. Like, we're as soon as Kickstarter funds, we're at least up to the recoup level.
And we know that
there's enough people to make it worth it. I mean, it's also an issue.
Yeah.
I don't want to bury thousands of cartridges in the desert like ET.
Well, do you think this changes the relationship? I mean, how does it feel to have enough people come in and say, you know what, we're putting up the money for like 78,000, we're all pledging. Does that change the relationship between the game makers and like the people who want to play them? You think? Is something like Kickstarter and crowdfunding, is that going to become bigger and bigger in the future?
Yeah, no. I mean, I think, this kind of thing is going to be everything in the future. We're going to look back at this time right now and be like, oh, yeah, I remember when there was this little search engine called Google. I remember that first time I signed up for Facebook with my college email account. It'll be – I mean, it's just the rate at which Kickstarter is growing, even in the last few months, is just astronomical. It's just the critical mass and the exponential growth. And, there's just a project that just got funded this week that crossed the $10 million mark in 30 days, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it changes everything, right? I mean, the idea that you can take – an idea directly to people who might be interested in it and ask them for funding up front and gauge the interest of people in your idea without having to go to some company to manufacture it and try and pitch it to them and try to get investors behind you who are risking their money without any data about whether this thing is going to sell or not. If you look at Kickstarter and look at some of the things that have been funded there that would have never existed without it. Like just this week, there was a Lucid Dreaming mask funded there. There hasn't been a Lucid Dreaming mask available on the market for like 10 years. And it's an extremely niche, weird thing. But they got $500,000 of funding.
Wow.
To get this thing made. And so it's like those kinds of things that just wouldn't exist, don't exist. Like this DS game.
Yes.
There's an Atari game that is just about to get funded as well. Like an Atari cartridge release for the 2600. So these kinds of things that, maybe have a niche audience, but, the niche audience might be large enough to make it happen, but it's really hard to judge ahead of time without taking a huge risk.
Maybe you're right. Maybe for things that are niche and have these dedicated, like, subgroups that are really passionate about it, definitely Kickstarter looks something like something that's good. I mean, your games, is it accurate to describe them as art games?
Have described them as art games, yes.
I mean, how would you feel about someone like arguing in defense of video games as a medium and then pointing at something like Passage?
Something like
Diamond Trust of London.
People do that, yes. how do I feel about it? I guess I feel flattered and humbled. I don't know. I mean, I guess I feel like the term art game has kind of run its course. I don't really think about games, and art game came to mean a very certain style of game design where mm-hmm. you were using game mechanics directly, kind of metaphorically, that were going to be interpreted by the player. Like, oh, this mechanic means this, and this other mechanic means that, and look at how these two mechanics work together. That probably means this. Those mechanical metaphors. I think people have kind of exhausted that sort of art game style. And we're the people who are doing that have kind of moved on to thinking about games in sort of a broader way. And, things like Diamond Trust are part of that. And the new game that I'm working on, or my last game inside of Starfield Sky, doesn't really fit into that mechanical metaphor model anymore.
Mm-hmm. So what is it that makes you want to make these games that are sort of on the edge of what video games are generally accepted to be? I mean, everyone says they could make, they want to make the next Call of Duty. But what drives you as a game maker?
All right. Yeah, it's because, you know, I really want to make a contribution, to the design space and create something that, that doesn't exist already. Right. And so even with, if you look at my like series of games that I've made, the sort of I, they're not all the same, right? It's not like I invented the first person shooter and then I continued to make first person shooters for 20 years or something, right? It's like I'm always like shooting off in a different direction. I'm trying to push myself and challenge myself to do something different, not just different from what other people are doing, but different from what I've done myself, along with being different from what other people are doing. And I think that that makes things more interesting. I mean, for me as a designer, not just making the same thing over and over again. And also for the people who are responding to my games, the players and the people who are buying my games and so on, you know, they basically never know what I'm going to do, what I'm going to do next, right? And so I think, you know, it's just much more interesting overall. It's hard, I guess, but you know, it just the fact that it's so much more interesting for me, even as a creator, makes it worth it.
Yeah, I think it's really exciting. The type whenever someone pushes that boundary, and whenever someone shows something that hasn't really been shown before, I think that's definitely exciting, and I hope you keep doing it. I'm looking forward to your next release. But I do have one more question, coming back to Diamond Trust of London. How many copies, regular and limited edition, do you think will be printed? Because I kicked in for 2 limited edition copies, and I want to know, you know, what my unopened, shrink-wrapped copy will be worth, the one that I just leave on the shelf.
Right, right. So there's only, I mean, like the Kickstarter campaign explains, there's only 1,000 signed and numbered limited editions. And so that number is fixed, and that's not going to change. Now, they actually haven't all been spoken for yet, because there's some copies of the limited edition are still available at the highest funding levels. So there's still a few left. But all the lower sort of normal tier funding level limited editions have been sold out for about a week now, I think. Yeah, and in terms of the regular edition, you know, they're all part of the same minimum order that I need to get from Nintendo, and that number is protected by non-disclosure agreements. So I can't tell you, but you know, it's $78,000 worth of cartridges.
Okay, well, I believe the Kickstarter is due to end this Saturday, and you're really close to your goal, so good luck there. And I look forward to getting my limited edition.
All right.
Thank you for coming on the show.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was fun.
Okay, goodbye.
Bye.
And welcome to another episode of Connectivity Jeopardy. I am your first co-host, Mike Sklenz, and Scott Thompson is my our co-host number 2.
Hello, Mike. Wonderful to be here.
It certainly is a good day for some Jeopardy.
Yes, you can feel it in the air.
Yes, and we've got 3 contestants with us this time. We've got Dan Koopman.
Hello.
Pedro Hernandez.
Hi.
And Zachary Miller.
Oh, that's nice.
All right, well, I guess we'll get right into our first round. We've got 5 categories. The first one is Trivia Time Capsule. A quick background on this one. I was cleaning out my my old student email, which got merged with my work email because I work for the school I went to now. And I found this old set of trivia questions that I had written in 2002 for when we used to do IRC Trivia Night. So 10 questions, and I turned them into 2 Jeopardy categories for tonight.
Awesome.
Cool.
Kong of the Jungle.
Okay.
Potent Quotables, which is, they are quotes from video games, and you have to name the game that it's from.
Okay.
Not the character that said it, the name of the game. We Third Party. and player's choice.
I'm surprised you could think of six questions in that Wii third-party category.
Yeah.
Bazinga!
Let's just be thankful that Carmine is not with us because he's going to own that category.
we'll let Dan pick first since it's his first time on.
I choose Wii third party.
Okay, for 100?
Yeah.
Okay. This point-and-click adventure featured a pirate and his faithful monkey.
What is second wiki?
That's correct, yeah, and then the board is yours.
Okay, let's continue with Wii third party.
Okay. Players controlled a scorpion and a tarantula in this Wii action game. Looks like Pedro.
What is deadly creatures?
It is, correct.
Okay.
I knew it, but I didn't know the name. It was like, wow.
Maybe if that game had a camel spider, I'd be more inclined.
Huh.
Okay. Pedro, the board is yours.
Okay, I'll keep with Wii third party.
Okay. This poorly reviewed minigame collection is one of the best-selling games on the Wii. Zach.
What is Carnival Games?
Correct.
Dang it. I was going to say all of them.
I was going to say Deca Sports.
Oh, yeah. That's another one.
That one honestly has a couple answers.
Yeah, that's true. A little
open-ended, I think there are like four Deca Sports
Any of the Raving Rabbit games.
Yeah, that's true. But I know Carnival Games sold like exceptionally well. I think literally like in the top five Wii games. All right, Zach, the board is yours.
Keep going.
All right. Clover Studio had nothing to do with this game's port from PS2 to Wii. Dan.
What is Okami?
Correct. And the board is yours.
Let's continue.
Okay. To close out the category. Question. This game, which has received countless sequels and spin-offs, is Ubisoft's best-selling Wii game to date. I believe that's Zach.
What is Raving Rabbids?
Incorrect.
Wow.
Anyone else?
What was the question?
All right, I'll read it one more time. This game, which has received countless sequels and spin-offs, is Ubisoft's best-selling Wii game to date. Pedro, did you buzz in?
Yeah.
Okay, what is it, Pedro?
I believe it's Just Dance.
Correct.
Oh, Ubisoft did that? Oh.
Yeah, they did that. Yeah.
All right, so that's it for Wii Third Party. Our remaining categories are Trivia Time Capsule, Kong of the Jungle, Potent Quotables, and Player's Choice.
I'm going to choose Kong of the Jungle.
All right, for 100?
Yeah.
Okay. The studio behind the trio of Donkey Kong Country games on the SNES. Pedro.
What is Rare?
Correct.
that was
Pedro is very good at this, by the way.
Yeah, here, hold on, let me clear the board there. Okay, and Pedro, keep going.
I continue with Kong of the Jungle for 200.
Okay. He is Dixie Kong's infantile sidekick in Donkey Kong Country 3. I think I gotta give it to Pedro because Zach buzzed in before I was done.
Okay. Who is Giddy Kong?
Ooh. Correct.
Oh. See, I was going to get it wrong, so good job, Pedro. I was going to say Baby Kong, but he was in 64, wasn't he?
Right, I think.
That's correct.
Yeah, it's, I mean, they're basically the same archetypes, but they give them new names and stuff. Yep. I don't know why that is. But anyway, Pedro, keep going on that one?
Yep.
Okay. They sued Nintendo over copyright infringement in 1984. Pedro.
What is Universal Studios?
Correct.
Damn.
I can see that, yeah.
Yeah, that one related because they sued because they thought it was too similar to King Kong. So, which they didn't win the case.
Well, King Kong does wear a giant red tie, so.
And he does toss a lot of barrels.
He really does.
He is after a hot brunette.
Yeah.
Actually, that one is true.
And he came to America for bananas. So, Pedro, keep rolling.
Yep.
Okay. Let me clear the board.
Okay. This one's evil.
The sixth best-selling game on the Nintendo 64. Pedro.
What is Donkey Kong 64?
Incorrect.
I knew I was wrong.
Oh. Anyone else?
No, that's it.
Wait, no, Zach buzzed in last second.
Just in time.
Melee?
Incorrect.
What is it?
Oh, hell.
It is Diddy Kong Racing.
Oh,
it's a Donkey Kong.
Yeah,
a little
tricky
sixth
there.
Sixth best of all time, really.
Yeah, sixth best N64 game. All right.
I completely forgot that was a Kong game.
Yep. And so, and actually the DS remake had Donkey Kong in it, while the N64 game never did. So, there's all that. Right. So, you want to finish that one out, Pedro?
Yep.
Okay.
Finish it up.
Okay. He is the villain in the original Donkey Kong. Pedro?
You say original Donkey Kong?
Yes.
Easy, Mario. Who is Mario?
Incorrect. Dan?
Who is Jumpman?
Incorrect.
What? Okay.
Wait, what?
Okay, this question might be tricky because you said the original Donkey Kong, which I assume is the arcade game.
Yes, it does. Mario is not the bad guy in the original Donkey Kong. You are Mario.
Right.
Jumpman. Right. So, it's not Jumpman. Zach, did you have a guess?
I was gonna say Jumpman.
The villain in the original Donkey Kong, maybe I'm misremembering, but it's Cranky Kong.
Oh, I know what you're saying. It's the
Listen,
none of you got right anyway.
That's a theory. That's stupid.
No, I'm pretty sure he says it in one of the Donkey Kong Country games. I'm pretty sure he intimates that it's him.
But Cranky's full of crap.
Yeah, you can't trust him. So, Cranky Kong. So.
All right, so we got our remaining categories are Trivia
both.
Time Capsule, Potent Quotables, and Player's Choice.
Right, and real quick, just for a scoring update, for those keeping track at home, that last question, even that category actually hurt a lot of people. So Pedro is down to 400.
Wow.
Yeah, Pedro was over 1,000 until a couple of those last ones. Zach is at negative 500.
Damn you, Cranky Kong.
Wow.
And Dan is at 100, so.
Okay.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's manageable.
Still anybody's game.
Yeah. All right, Pedro, the board's still yours then.
I got to pick player's choice for 100.
Okay. And keep in mind then, so the answers to these questions are player's choice games. So some of these might surprise you. But maybe not, because I think near the end they kind of just made everything a player's choice to sell it.
I think it'll be more surprising for me considering I live in Europe.
Oh, that's true. Well, I know it carried over between regions. I think
most of them carried over.
Yeah, okay. There were some exclusives. I was looking at it today, but okay. So for 100, Sonic's rival dual wields poor reviews and a faux mature story in this GameCube game. Pedro.
Can you repeat the question again? I didn't quite listen to it.
Totally got that. I totally got that one.
I don't think I can, Pedro. I don't think you can buzz in and then ask to hear the question again. We'll give Zach a shot. If he doesn't get it, I'll come back to you.
Shadow the Hedgehog.
It is. Zach is correct.
Bullshit game.
Oh my god. No way.
Yep, player's choice.
Yep, it was.
Player's choice.
Alright, Zach, the board is yours.
Keep going.
Okay. This game is more well known for swatting flies and composing music than for what its title suggests. Pedro.
What is Mario Paint?
Correct.
Okay.
Oh. Fly swatting game is awesome.
Fly swatting game
great
is
music.
Awesome.
Fun fact, that's how I was able to control my mouse on the computer because of Mario Paint and that game.
I wonder if Mario Paint makes you really good at first person shooters. Gives you good Twitch reaction skills.
Oh, yeah, that's perfect. Yeah, you go from that and just go play Quake.
Okay. Okay, I'll continue. Player's choice.
Okay. The second game in the Metroid series, but not chronologically. Pedro.
Oh, shit. I know it's Metroid, but I can remember the subtitle.
All right, we'll go with Dan.
What is Metroid Prime 2 Echoes?
Incorrect. I might have worded this.
I think you worded it properly.
Did I? Okay, cool. Zach, do you have a guess?
It's Metroid 2, Return of Samus.
Correct.
Oh, okay.
That's right, yeah.
Second game in the series, but not chronologically.
Right, in terms of the story. So Zach, I think the board is yours.
Are we done with that category?
No, there are two left, 400 and 500.
Let's do it.
Okay, 400. Originally planned as a Nintendo 64 launch title, Midway released this ugly arcade port 2 years late. Pedro.
What is Cruising USA?
Correct.
Wow.
Wow.
I won't deny it.
It looks like an N64 game.
It looks like a really bad N64. I mean, played Mario Kart and played Cruising USA.
I love that game. I have no regrets. I love that game because it's so bad.
I know. I just played it recently. Me and my girlfriend just played through the entire thing like 6 months ago, I think.
I love Cruising USA. It's so bad.
Yeah. Little wizard tribute there. Alright, so Pedro, you want to finish that one out?
Yep.
Alright. The Nintendo 64 port of this PlayStation classic sure wasn't scary, featuring improved graphics and sound, as well as FMV, a rarity for the system. Pedro again.
I'm going to take a shot in the dark here. What is Resident Evil 2?
Correct.
Ah, well done.
I got lucky with that one. Because there were several PS1 horror games that were ported over to the N64.
The FMV is the key.
Yeah.
It's one of only two N64 games that has FMV in it.
What's the other one?
Yeah.
Pokemon Puzzle League.
Oh yeah, you're right. Like the intro, right?
Yeah, it's got an FMV anime show. Intro.
Yeah. So scoring update.
That game got extra RAM for that.
Just for that.
Yep.
A puzzle game.
Right, just so, for the four kids animation.
So scoring update. Pedro now has jumped ahead to 1200. Zach has moved up to -100.
Awesome.
Getting there. And Dan has moved down to -200.
Okay. I take it.
You'll get there.
Alright, so two categories left in the Jeopardy round. Trivia Time Capsule and Potent Quotables.
I'll take Potent Quotables for 100.
Okay, remember, the answer is the name of the game that the quote is from.
Okay.
You said for 100?
Yep.
Okay. I feel asleep. That's going to be Pedro.
What is Metal Gear?
Correct.
That was a classic.
Yeah. Right, board is yours.
Okay, what is
Well, at least you're in the groove.
Potent Quotables for 200.
You spoony bard. That's Pedro again.
What is Final Fantasy IV?
Yes, I would have also accepted Final Fantasy II. U.S. numbering.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Damn, son.
Yeah, I know, right?
Okay, continue. Potent Quotables with 300.
All right. Buy something, will ya?
Zach.
Oh, my God. Why did I say that? wait. Buy something, will ya? Zelda. Legend of Zelda.
Yes. Nick of time.
I was going to say every Zelda game ever made. I'm pretty sure that that quote appears on the Zelda games every once in a while.
Alright, Zach, right. The board is yours.
I'll finish it off.
Alright, well, this is 400.
Oh, then that.
It might be handy if you, the master of unlocking, take it with you.
No. Actually, I watched it. I think we gotta give it to Zach. I think Pedro buzzed
yeah,
in
yeah.
before.
Pedro
buzzed
yeah, early. I think buzzed too early. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Resident Evil!
Yeah. All right, do you want to close that category out?
Yes, I do.
Wait, barf.
Nobody? Rats.
Barf.
Wait. Barf.
Barf.
Pedro.
I think I'm going to lose all of my money with this because I'm going to take a really dark shot in the dark. What is Earthbound?
No, that's incorrect.
I knew it.
Now, anybody else?
Technically, I think Master Belch does say barf at some point, but that's not really a memorable quote. Now, that's not what we're looking for, unfortunately.
I guess no one else is going to ring in. I thought this was too easy.
I thought
so, too.
The answer
is River City Ransom.
Never played it.
Every single time you punch a dude on the bottom of the screen, it says barf! Exclamation. Or oof, but one of the things they say when you punch them is barf.
Yeah. I did actually know that. Damn it.
All right, so that leaves us with just the Trivia Time Capsule category left. Scott, do we have a score update?
Yeah, Pedro's down to 1,000. Zach is up to 600, and Dan stood still at -200.
I'm way too slow. I'm not Sonic.
Again, these questions were written in 2002. That doesn't necessarily mean they are from games that were out around 2002, but I would not
Metroid
be surprised
Prime,
if they
Wind Waker,
were.
Sunshine.
Okay, so who has the board?
Zach.
Is it Zach? Zach got the last correct answer?
I'll take that category.
Yeah. Well, I mean, okay, for 100?
Sure!
Okay. technically speaking, Sonic's middle name.
Zach.
The.
Yeah, that's
what is the?
What is that?
It's pretty good.
200?
Yeah.
The name of Samus's former CO and also her computer in Metroid Fusion. That's Zach again.
Adam Malkovich.
Yeah, just Adam if you're referring to the computer.
Well, sure.
300?
Yes, sir.
In Animal Crossing, a beaver runs this weekly contest throughout November.
Son of a bitch.
Two beavers is better than one.
All right, I'm calling time on that. The answer is fishing contest.
I did have the name in my head, but I didn't know the activity in my head, surprisingly.
Okay. Zach, we got 400 and 500 left.
Well, let's do four.
All right, now this is a daily double for this round of Jeopardy.
How much do I have?
Zach, you have 900.
I'll bet 200,
okay. And so remember, everyone, this question then is only for Zach, since it's the daily double.
Unless he gets it wrong, in which case one of you can ring in immediately.
I don't think that's how daily doubles
work. Yeah, I don't think so
Isn't
either.
It? Oh, okay, never mind then. All right. The only beam that will damage Ridley in Super Metroid.
But did you mean Mother Brain?
Did you bet? Did you make it a true daily double?
Yeah, he said 200.
Okay, I said 200.
Okay. No, Ridley.
Ridley, really?
I don't know. I think it is, actually.
You can damage him with a whole lot of beams, dude. You can switch that shit up a lot.
Yeah. Hold on, I got this question wrong.
But Mother Brain's final form can only be hurt with the hyper beam.
And I think, Mike, you were thinking of what can you only hurt a Metroid with.
Yeah, a Metroid is the ice beam.
All right, well, you got the question right, even though I got the answer wrong.
Now, you can only hurt Ridley and Other M with the the plasma beam.
But this was 2002.
Well, Other M wasn't out in 2002.
Well, I understand that.
So I think you meant Metroid. Which, because the answer
you know more about Metroid than me, so for that,
even,
I think
you don't even damage it with the ice beam. You freeze it and then blow it up with missiles. This is what happens when I don't write the questions.
These were written in trivia versions. I reversed all of them and made the answers the questions and the questions the answers. So I probably screwed this one up when I did that.
That's all right. I'm just happy I won.
And also, we'll give you the 200 for that.
And sweet. Also, Zach, your questions aren't always perfect. Go back and listen to the live Jeopardy at PAX.
The Turok one was the only one I got wrong.
All right, so there's one left. Zach, I assume, we have to pick it for 500 points in Trivia Time Capsule.
No, I want a double Jeopardy category.
All right. Peach cooks steak, fish, lobster, egg, and peppers in this modern Game & Watch Gallery 4 game.
Oh, screw this.
Repeat the question again, please.
I will, only because no one's answered. Peach cooks steak, fish, lobster, egg, and peppers in this modern Game & Watch Gallery 4 game.
Okay.
All right, that's it.
Buzz No.
Dan?
What a chef.
Correct.
Hey.
Got out of the negative zone. All right.
For the Jeopardy round, Scott, what's our score update before we move on?
Sure. Pedro is sitting at 1,000. Zach has jumped ahead with 1,100.
What's up?
And Dan has moved back into the positives with now 300.
Nice.
Hooray.
All right, so we're going to take a little break and get to know our contestants here. Zach, I understand that you have a corgi, and his name is Ozzy?
It is. He's cute, but it's summer now, and he has a very thick coat, so he doesn't like going outside.
Even in Alaska, it gets hot out?
It gets, the hottest days, it inches towards 80.
Ooh, 80.
And we're all dying.
I think it's like 85 here in Florida, and it's 10 o'clock at night right now.
God. LA's going to kill me.
Well, yeah, what about Pedro? That's got to be hot for Pedro's head,
too. Yeah, it's going to be 100.
You have no humidity up there. You have no room to complain.
That's true.
So, moving on. Dan, I understand that you have a passion for homemade cappuccino. That's very interesting.
Not really.
Like to, you like to start your day off with a nice home-brewed glass of cappuccino?
Yes, I do. It certainly takes a while to make, but it's way better when you make stuff yourself, definitely. Yeah. It just tastes better, in my opinion. We do have a quick coffee machine where you can make one, but I barely use it at all. It's like...
Europeans are too good for machine coffee.
Well, I can't resist Starbucks for some reason.
Who can?
Oh, Pedro, I understand that you just recently saw a 3DS in person. That's very exciting.
Yes, I did. It was the best day of my life.
Any plans to buy one soon? Maybe with your NWR connectivity winnings? Like connectivity hopefully, Jeopardy winnings?
Hopefully, because it sucks not having a 3DS.
Yeah, well right now you're at $1,000, so if you play it conservatively, you could probably buy a couple.
Maybe. I can buy the whole library with that.
Yep. And then we'll just stay in his underpants and play Brody Quest all day.
Yeah. Live the life, 100 degrees.
Okay. All right, so let's move on to Double Jeopardy. All the questions are worth twice as much, and there are two daily doubles in this round.
Okay.
And I think we left off with Dan gets the board. He answered the last one. So we have Trivia Time Capsule, another one. Like Mike said, he had two. Disney Games.
Okay.
Oh.
Guess who wrote that one?
Oh, Lord.
E3 Flashbacks. E-Shopping.
E-Shopping.
And accessorizing.
E-shopping.
Right.
Looks like me and Dan have our own categories.
200 points, 400 points, 600 points, 800 points, and 1,000 points.
Let's go with the first one.
All right. This game was given out for free during the eShop's first month of business.
Damn.
3D, what is 3D Classic Side Bike?
All right. That is correct.
Nice.
The board is yours.
Let's go to the next one.
Pushmo was developed by this veteran Nintendo development house.
I was watching it.
Dan's was too early.
Yeah, Dan, you buzzed in before you finished the question.
What is Intelligent Systems?
That is correct.
Oh, thank God.
Makers of Advance Wars, Fire Emblem.
Basically a coin flip.
Pushmo. the board is yours, Zach.
Keep it on going.
All right. The only Sonic game currently available on the 3DS eShop's Virtual Console. In America. Qualified. That's Dan.
Yeah.
Am I allowed to say the Japanese name because I don't know the American one?
I don't know the Japanese one.
Yeah, go ahead. I'll look
it
up.
Describe it.
What is Sonic and Tails 2?
I wonder, yeah.
I don't know.
I don't know. That's not the same as the American name, if it is true.
Is that game Sonic Blast, I think?
No, system is the game you're on thinking of on?
Game Gear?
Okay.
Yeah.
Here, let me see if I can find out.
I didn't realize that this game would have a different name in different regions.
Yeah. It was Sonic and Tails 2 in Japan, so it says nice. Wikipedia.
The American name is Sonic the Hedgehog Triple Trouble.
Okay. I don't know the American name, so there you go.
I did not, if I had known that had a different name, I probably would have not written that question.
Yeah.
All right, so we've got 800 and 1,000 left in that category, and then all the other categories are completely available.
Let's continue.
All right, for 800 points, the first game to have a demo on the U.S. eShop. That's Zach.
What is Resident Evil Revelations? I think
or
that's
Revelations.
No, it's right.
It's right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, you got the name wrong. It's Revelations.
Revelation. Yeah, you're right. My copy's called that, yeah.
My copy's just called Revelations. What the hell you guys are talking about?
There was a typo on the U.S. box art.
I know.
It says Revelations.
That just like the two of you guys.
Oh, I see.
Notice that only happened on the American box art.
Well, no, I suppose the Canadian box art was probably the same in the Mexican, too.
Maybe that's how Canadians spell Revelations.
No, they would have put a U in there.
They would have put a U in it.
Okay, that is racist towards Europeans. Shut it.
No, it's racist towards Canadians.
Yeah, but Europeans do it too.
In Europe, is it called Sonic Colors?
Yes, of course. Okay, this is racist. Shut it.
I thought they were just like all that. You spell words funny.
Zach, you will be at E3, right?
Oh yeah, I'll be at E3.
I will kick your ass.
Alright. I'll kick your ass in Mario Kart.
It's Zach.
Zach, yes. Zach, you live in Alaska. That's basically Canada anyway.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Although we are not obsessed with hockey like they are.
I am. Go Devils.
Are they
winning right now? Oh my god.
I'll take the last one in this category.
Alright. A music video from this band was used to promote the launch of the eShop's Nintendo video section. That's Zach.
Okay, go.
Correct. Awesome band, by the way.
That was kind of a pretty good video, too.
Yeah, their videos are always very interesting, so they make a good choice.
Wait, guys have an Okay Go video?
Yep. Hell yeah, we don't anymore.
Yeah, it came out, and it was available for like the first month, and then it took it away.
Yeah, that was hard. That was kind of U.S.-centric. That really wasn't fair to Dan. hopefully the rest of these will be a little more even. And for a scoring update, Pedro still at 1,000. Zach has jumped to 3,300.
What's up?
And Dan has made up some ground. He's at 1,100, so wow, sitting in second.
Yeah, I'm feeling pretty good about that. Yeah. Yeah,
Don, we would have accepted Kylie Minogue for the European eShop.
Oh, Zach, I'm totally gonna kick your ass now.
Is she still making music?
Yeah, dude, she's good.
Really?
Kylie's good, man.
I thought she went away in the 90s.
She was in a Doctor Who episode a few years ago.
Oh my gosh, you're kidding me.
Space Titanic episode.
Yeah, it was awesome.
Good one. It was a Christmas special. Even.
Yeah, really good.
All right, so categories left. Trivia Time Capsule, Disney Games, Accessorizing, and E3 Flashbacks.
Accessorizing for the first number.
Okay. It was necessary in order to save ghost data in Mario Kart 64. Zach.
What is the memory pack?
Incorrect.
That was my answer. That was going to be my answer.
All right.
You guys are right, but you're wrong.
Yeah, it, that's what it is, but it's technically called the controller pack.
Oh, yeah.
P-A-K. P-A-K.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was when Nintendo was trying to be unique and trying to be different from the memory card.
Yeah, and have it jam into the bottom of the controller. So, so Zach, the board is still yours.
I'm sad. Let's keep going.
Okay, and that is our Daily Double.
Oh, God.
One of them.
So, Zach, what would you like to wager? You sit at 3,100, well above everyone else.
Let's do 500.
500, okay. This game came with a special Mario-themed dance pad.
Oh, it's, Dance Dance Revolution Mario Mix.
Correct.
What's up?
Should have made it a true Daily Double.
Well, oh yeah, you would have been way ahead.
That's true.
one of the final games to be called Dancing Stage in Europe.
You know, I miss the DDR games. Like, if I could get good quality pad, I'd buy another one.
I used to drop probably, like, $20 a week into a DDR machine at the local arcade.
Holy crap.
Yeah, I got really good at it, and then I stopped playing it, I don't know. I'm really good at Rock Band as a result, because every music game is really secretly just a rhythm game.
Well, right? Yeah.
It's, if you're good at percussion, you can play any music game very well.
So. Yeah.
All right, so Zach, the board is yours.
Keep on going.
All right, for 600, Nintendo's first foray into rhythm gaming featured these. Looks like Pedro.
What is the Donkey Kong bongos?
Correct, the DK bongos. Yes.
I had four sets
of those.
Bongos. Oh my gosh, four sets.
What happened was I bought Donkey Kong Country 1 or Donkey Kong 1 and 2 from Japan. I got a bundle pack, and then I bought a second set of bongos with it, and then I got the review copy of the American version of the game, and Nintendo sent two sets of bongos with that.
Holy crap. Awesome.
So we had four-player Donkey Kongo, which the game is kind of dumb, but with four people, it was surprisingly fun. We played it for hours.
That was the point. It was it's so dumb, it's so fun.
It's so simple. You can do, left, right, or both, and you can hit, like, top or bottom, and that's, or you can hit the edge of the rim or the top of the bongo, and that's it.
My hands would get so sore playing that.
Yeah. It's
not to mention that
I still have them.
I have every single version of Donkey Konga.
Wow.
No, it's so I guess the US version and Donkey Konga's 1 and 2 from Japan.
Not to mention that the American version got really dumb when you start playing, and there was a farmer had a big
yeah. But it has a real big fish song, so shut
the American version had a horrible soundtrack.
No, it's got real big fish.
That's right. Oh, that's it. All right, let's roll on. So, Pedro, the board is yours.
The board, and is the category over?
No, there's two still left. Two left.
Let's finish accessories.
Okay, for 800. This device let your Pokemon battle on your TV screen. Pedro.
What is the... Oh, fuck.
Oh, which platform? N64?
Yes.
What is the Jasper Pack?
Correct.
Damn it.
So close.
I still have mine.
Me too. I still have mine.
What were you saying, Dan?
I was saying, ah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I didn't think you were going to get it for a second, Pedro.
I was kind of so confused by the. I was kind of first confused by the question. Which Pokemon does he mean?
Well, that's true.
Pokemon Stadium 1 and 2.
Yeah, was there a different device for, like, GameCube and stuff? I guess there must have been.
No,
yeah,
it was a wireless transfer from your,
Oh, Nintendo DS, yeah,
I guess I should have clarified a little bit, but... all right, Pedro, you just want to finish that one out?
Yep.
Okay. You couldn't charge your Game Boy Advance SP and use these at the same time.
Oh.
Huh?
Oh. What? Yeah. I didn't listen.
Headphones, baby!
Correct.
Yeah, one of the most short-sighted design decisions ever.
Right. Well, on top of that, you had to buy a special set of headphones.
Adapter.
Yeah. It didn't even have a headphone jack. Yeah,
you could buy an adapter,
Right. That was a really good Penny Arcade when they were talking about how great the SP is over the original GBA, but the kid says, but I can't use my headphones. He says, nope, you're still fucked.
All right, Scott, can we have a score update?
Sure. So after that category, Pedro's up to 2,400. Zach is at 4,600. And Don is at 1,100.
It's lonely. Right, it's lonely at the top.
Our remaining categories are Trivia Time Capsule, Disney Games, and E3 Flashbacks.
I'm staying the hell away from Disney Games, so let's do the Time Capsule again.
All right. For how many points?
The first one.
All right. I don't know why we asked. You guys always go in order. It's very boring. Trivia Time Capsule 200. In Super Mario RPG, the value of one golden beetle in frog coins.
Ooh.
Zach?
What is 10?
Incorrect. Anybody else?
Could you repeat that question one more time?
if Pedro answers it incorrectly, I will.
What
he
is,
just buzzed in.
What is 50 points?
No.
That would beat the game right there.
Okay.
I will reread the question. In Super Mario RPG, the value of one golden beetle in frog coins. This is a currency
exchange rate question.
Exchange rate question.
Okay,
I'm calling that nobody.
No.
The answer is one. They are worth exactly the same.
They trade
evenly on the exchange.
Nicely
one
done,
one golden
sir.
Beetle is one frog coin.
Yeah, kind of a trick question there, huh?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or at least a dick question. Who's in control of the board?
I think it's Zach.
Keep going, sir.
All right. Chaturga bests this force in Eternal Darkness.
What?
Huh?
Chaturga beats this opposing force in Eternal Darkness.
Oh, I see, the god.
I did not word it right.
I just recently played that game.
Time's up. The answer is Zelotoff.
I was wrong.
I can't even remember what the third one is.
You got lucky.
What's the third one?
Antarok?
Antarok.
Parnoth?
No, I think you're right. I think you're right with the first one.
Okay.
Okay, well, Zach, you're in control of the board.
Going.
This game's television commercial included the quote, "You think I'm a chump? Try the raccoon."
That sounds so familiar and so 90s.
These are hard. Time is up. The answer is Animal Crossing.
I was going to say that, but I didn't want to risk it.
Oh, I should be doing well.
Yeah,
Animal
Zach,
Crossing
you didn't
want to
risk it with all those points you have. All right. There's 800 and 1,000 left in Trivia Time Capsule, and then E3 flashbacks and Disney games.
Keep going with this.
All right, as a daily double.
Oh, you're kidding me.
Zach gets them all.
All of them daily doubles for Zach. How many points does he have, Scott?
Zach, you're at 4,400.
Let's do another 500.
All right. The spin-off company created by Konami so they could publish more than 5 NES.
Wait. Before you finish that question, did you guys count my last daily double as 1,000 points?
No, you bet 500.
I know, but it's double Jeopardy.
Yeah, but you bet 500. That's
so you get
you
1,000, or...
You bet what you bet.
Oh, you do?
Right.
Oh,
yeah, sure. I think so.
Well, all right, screw it.
All right, so...
Ultra, what is Ultra?
Don't do it. That is correct. Little history lesson for those of you that don't know. On the NES, Nintendo would not grant more than 5 licenses for games per year to any individual developer. And
right.
When Konami wanted to release more than 5 games, they just spun off a second company to get 5 more.
Yep.
I wish like it would have been really lame. Like they would have just called it like Skonami or something. Instead of Ultra. That would have been awesome.
Konami just put
Konami
an extra
backwards.
I at the end.
Konami
yeah,
backwards.
Exactly.
All right, so we got 1,000 points left in that category, plus Disney games and E3 flashbacks.
E3 flashbacks.
Oh, mixing it up.
Wait, no, we're not done.
There's 1,000.
Damn it!
Keep going.
All right. The maximum time required to see Samus' face at the end of Super Metroid.
Oh, Super Metroid.
That is
Zach. Wait, no, that's right. Yes, I know this.
Okay.
What is 2 hours?
Incorrect.
Oh,
10.
Oh, her face! Shit!
Her face. Just her
Ow,
face.
That hurt.
If you do it under 10, it's her face.
I like that you didn't give anyone else a chance. I mean, maybe no one knew it, but you just
Keith,
told
thanks,
me it's
guy.
Oh, shit. I'm sorry. Damn it. Well, I propose that we give Pedro and Dan 500 points each as a consolation. Because that question was worth 1,000.
When we did the Jeopardy Live, Neil would always do that. You would just give out the answer when there were
just
people
Neil,
in the audience.
I want to hand it. I want to hand it.
Yeah, exactly. Ron and
okay, well, left are... Scott, if you want to give them each 500 points, go ahead.
Well, did either of you actually know that?
Yeah, I have not actually answered that question.
And you were going to guess 10?
I was going to get... If I was being honest, I would have guessed around 10, 11, yes.
Okay, you know, I'll give you a count. I'll do... That was worth 1,000. Let's give you 500 as a consolation prize.
That's fair. That's fair.
Okay. I won't run ahead any more of these questions.
Yeah, and that keeps it interesting.
Yeah.
Just a scoring update. Pedro, 2,200. Zach, 3,900. And Dan, 1,600.
There we go. Not bad. All right, so Disney games and E3 flashbacks.
E3.
And it's, for 200?
Yep.
Okay. This year at E3, Nintendo showcased Mario, Metroid, and Zelda games for the GameCube.
I think it was
Pedro?
Pedro.
What is E3 2002?
Correct.
That is, yes, Pedro says E3 2002, which is correct. Okay, E3 flashbacks for 400. The Wii was first announced in 2004 under this code name. That's Dan.
What is Nintendo Revolution?
Correct.
That is correct.
Let's continue.
All right. Nintendo thought they had their finger on the pulse of the market when they showed off this Vaporware Wii peripheral in 2009. Gotta give that to Zach.
What is the, oh, fuck. It's the pulse thing. The finger pulse. God damn it.
No, that's not it. All right.
Goes to Dan.
Dan?
What is the Wii Vitality Sensor?
Correct.
Let's continue.
Dan is getting a comeback at the end here. This is exciting. All right, would you like to continue with that one?
Yeah.
For 800 points, in 2006, this survival horror game was teased for the Wii, but was never released. That's Pedro.
That was a big mistake. you mean horror game teased for the Wii?
2006. Never came out.
Never came out.
Yeah, time's up. Time's up. I'm sorry.
I have one in my head.
I almost ran a hand.
Okay. I have one in my head, but if it's the one I'm thinking of, it got released in Europe.
Okay, so
no, this game definitely never got released.
Okay.
So then, I guess then that's it.
This is the one I think of.
The answer is Sadness.
Yeah.
All right,
but
we got
that was teased. Any tweet?
Yeah, I kind of remember that.
Yeah, it was teased in a reel at the opening of E3 2006. Last question in this category for 1,000 points. Nintendo shocked their audience in 2000 by promoting this game with an open bar on the show floor. That is Pedro.
What is Conker's Bad Fur Day?
That is correct.
Wow. Nice.
Score update. This is going to be good.
Yeah, shit's getting close. So we have Pedro. Luckily, he got that one. He's boosted back up to 2,600.
Yay!
Zach has stumbled a bit to 3,300.
Mm.
And Don has shot up a little bit himself. Now he's at 2,600 as well.
Oh! This is tight. And yeah. Last category, Disney games.
Okay.
Well, this is where I give up the lead.
No, you might know some of these. You might know some of these. All right.
I'll be easy.
Do you just want to start at the top, or do you want to? There might be some strategy here in picking the point value of the questions.
Okay.
Do it the normal way to piss him off.
Well, and the first category is on Disney games.
All right, for 200 points, this first Disney character was reintroduced to the world in Epic Mickey. That is Pedro.
Who is Oswald the Lucky Rabbit?
Correct.
That's correct. You just want to keep going?
Yep.
All right, 400 points. In Disney's Magical Quest, Mickey dons this hat to use magic-based powers.
What is the magician's hat?
You got to be a little more specific. And also, I didn't call your name. No one else rang in. I'll give you a chance to be a little more specific.
What is the magician's hat? Wizard hats.
No? That is incorrect. He dons a turban.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Now I remember. Fuck.
He also wears a fireman's outfit.
I was gonna say you didn't really give him a chance to guess again.
Shit! I run hand it. Well, no one else seemed to know the answer. No one rang in.
Yeah, but it's still not fair enough.
I know it's not fair. I'm sorry.
Mike's a jerk.
Should I come up with another question real quick just for Scott or just for Zach and Dan?
No, it's okay.
Okay, I'm sorry, guys.
I don't think they knew it.
Okay, for 600, in Adventures in the Magic Kingdom for the NES, this is the only land with two attractions that you can ride.
Christ.
That's Pedro.
What is Adventureland?
That is incorrect.
Fuck.
Can you please repeat the question one more time?
In Adventures in the Magic Kingdom for the NES, this is the only land which has two attractions that you can ride.
I just realized that question.
I know it somewhere, but I can't figure it out.
Zach, I assume you have no idea.
I played that game when I was little, but I have no idea.
I love that game. All right, well, I'm going to call time. The answer is Tomorrowland. You can ride both Space Mountain and the Tomorrowland Speedway.
Yeah, that was the answer I was going to say. After that one, because I just remembered that the cars are in Tomorrowland.
Yeah, Pirates of the Caribbean is in Adventureland. Haunted Mansion is in Liberty Square. But if this was Disneyland, they would both have been in Adventureland.
Yeah, I was thinking Disneyland, because as in the game, it's actually in Disneyland and not Disney World.
No, it's Adventures in the Magic Kingdom. That's the Orlando theme park. And it's got the Orlando theme park on the cover of the box and everything.
This is Ghost Beyond Me. I only know the Paris one.
Right.
The Disneyland park is just called Disneyland. It's not called the Magic Kingdom.
But, Mike, when the Pirates of the Caribbean broke down, the pirates didn't eat the tourists.
Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. Thanks. Nice. Thanks for the Jurassic Park reference. We can always use those. All right, we got 800 points. Rare developed this N64 Disney racing game.
Pedro?
What is Mickey Speedway USA?
Correct. Wow.
I
did not even know that until this morning when I wrote this question. I did not know that they ever did that game or anything even remotely like it. All right, last question. I guess should we get a score update real quick?
Yeah, just to, for the final question. Pedro has sort of gone back and forth. He's the only one who's done anything, actually. And he's returned to 2,600. he at one point was down to 1,800, but that last question bumped him back up to 2,600.
And that's it?
That's it. Zach's at 3,300. Dan's still at 2,600.
All right. For 1,000 points, in DuckTales for the NES, you are searching for this treasure on the moon. Zach.
What is cheese?
A little more specific.
Green cheese.
Yeah, I'll take that.
Okay.
The full answer is the green cheese of longevity.
Oh.
Whoa.
I did not know that either, that it had a crazy name like that.
That has, that level has perhaps the best
music
chip
tune of any NES
game.
For sure. Yeah. I might just have to put that in here while you guys are figuring out Final Jeopardy.
Please do.
Give me the Final Jeopardy category. Screw the regular music.
Right. I might do that. All right, so we are on to Final Jeopardy. It's just a reminder for the scores. Pedro, you have 2,600. Zach has 4,300. And Don has 2,600.
And you guys can each send your bets in a personal message to Scott.
Yes, so go to Skype, and not in this chat, but in a new chat with just me, send me your wager. Let me give you the category first. The category is Name That Decade. Okay, are you guys ready?
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
So just to let you guys know, the answer is going to be a decade. So, for example, you could say the 1950s. That would be a correct answer. What is the 1950s? So it's got to be in that kind of that form. So the answer is the decade when Nintendo was founded. Okay, I think I have everyone's answers now. Let me make sure.
Who's in last place? Reveal that one first.
So, last place, well, we have a tie, so I'll go to Don. He only wagered $100. He was playing conservative. And his answer was the exact year. It was what is 1889, which is correct, which bumps him up to 2,700.
Damn it.
Why did I bet so low?
Okay. Yep. I know, I was surprised when I saw 100. I was gonna ask you to make sure, but I was like, well, he knew what he was doing.
Yeah, I was thinking it's nothing gonna be for me.
And then, and then next was Pedro. Pedro wagered 1,500, and his answer is what is the 1,800s, which is off by 89 years. So that is incorrect. So adjust his score.
Got the century right.
Yeah. Okay. And then last was Zach, who said, what are the 1890s? So off by 8 by a year. He wagered 1,000, though, which brings him down to 3,300 and still the winner
of
this round of Jeopardy. You are lucky Don wasn't confident in himself.
Yes.
He would have been in trouble.
Oh, thank God.
So congratulations, Zach.
Yeah. All right. Hooray. So that has been a wonderfully successful round of Jeopardy. Thanks a lot to Don, Pedro,
yep,
and Zach.
Yeah, it was fun.
It was my first time. It was insane.
And of course, to my my co-host Scott.
Always a pleasure, Mike.
It's been wonderful, and I guess we will see you guys probably next month for another round of Jeopardy.
Fun.
Bye.
Bye.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode, and I hope you enjoyed it. Don't forget, you can send your email questions to connectivity@nintendoworldreport.com, and if you have the time, please rate and review us in iTunes. Don't forget, E3 is coming up real soon. We'll be having a ton of coverage, both from Radio Free Nintendo's away team and the home team here with the Connectivity crew. So keep listening, and we will see you next week.